So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Hope you guys could hear me now. I apologize. Apparently there is some kind of a problem with the audio. Hopefully that has been taken care of right now. We've got that squared away. For some reason, I don't know what's going on. But for the last couple of days now, we have had a considerable problem with right at showtime. I use the same equipment 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, right here in the studio. I listen and talk on Skype all day, but for some reason when this show starts every night, we seem to have a problem with this same equipment, and I have to switch equipment out. So my apologies. I will work on that and try to have that corrected by tomorrow. I was hoping it was an individual issue last week, but apparently it was not. So we will get that fixed and squared away. In the meantime, as I was starting the show with, it seems Kentucky is starting to maybe get a little help from Southern Indiana. Apparently, bridge tolls in Indiana across I-65, the Kennedy Bridge, has got them worried that the Southern Indiana people are going to lose a lot of business. So what we've got is we have some Southern Indiana officials who are actually proposing that Indiana pay Kentucky's unfunded portion of the bridges to avoid any tolls on I-65. Now, this doesn't mean that we're not going to have tolls on the new bridge and everything else, but for the existing I-65 corridor bridge, You know, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars is what Southern Indiana is talking about, and that's supposed to help the Clark and county businesses and Floyd businesses, those things right there. That's according to Paul Fetter, who's a Clarksville town councilman who's leading this effort. He's trying to stop the negative impact of tolls. And what makes that real interesting is how poor is Kentucky where we have to go to Indiana to help us with our tolls? You know, they're trying to avoid a lawsuit. Apparently, Indiana believes that they go ahead and pay for the tolls, that they can avoid a lawsuit against tolling, which is what we are looking at. According to Mitch Daniels, or I'm sorry, according to Steve Pence, or Mike Pence, who took over from Mitch Daniels as governor in January, you know, he said he's going to follow through with the original agreement. He is not interested in doing a bond or anything else to help Kentucky with their portion. Don't blame him a bit. But I like the idea that by Paul Fetter, the Clarksville town councilman who's leading this effort, to try to help avoid a tolls. If Indiana has the money, he seems to think they do. This is what he wants to do. I actually commend him for the effort, but I agree with Mike Pence. You know, Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, it's not their concern. It's our problem. And, you know, that's something that we should be taking up and holding accountable to none other than Governor Steve Beshear and his lackey, Lieutenant Governor Jerry Abramson and Greg Dumbo in the House. You know, we should be holding these guys accountable to no tolls. There is no reason for tolling for these new bridges. For one thing, the majority of people did not want the bridges. All we wanted was an East End bridge, period. The majority of people wanted an East End bridge and an East End bridge alone, which could have been done with no tolling, minimal cost, split between Kentucky and Indiana. But Kentucky had to screw everything up. Now they want to redo Spaghetti Junction, rebuild it completely, changing everything to do with Spaghetti Junction. They want to build a second bridge downtown next to the Kennedy Bridge, the I-65 bridge that currently exists, and they want to make one bridge one-way traffic and another bridge the opposite direction. They've added all these costs and turned it into a $2.3 billion project, which could have been done for less than half of that if we'd have stuck with one bridge and just upgraded a few and did just a few road improvements. Now they want to jump it up to this, and they want us to go ahead and pay tolls for the rest of our life for it. I am against tolling all the way, have been, have agreed with the say no to tolls people since the very, very beginning of this. It's an unnecessary expense for people when we don't have the money. You know, this bridge is supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to create more than 9,000 jobs over 30 years in Indiana, which is nothing. It's supposed to create nearly 18,000 spinoff jobs over 30 years in Clark and Floyd counties, Indiana, Jefferson, Bullitt, and Oldham counties in Kentucky. So that's your total jobs. But here's the thing. The combined economic benefit to the business, is about $78 billion. Not 7.8, not 0.78, $78 billion is what they're estimating the region's business to do if we build these bridges. With that in mind, should we be paying tolls on a $2.8 billion bridge fiasco? I've got to ask that, because even if those numbers are half of that, which they won't be, let's say we're not going to get $78 billion in business. We're going to get $30 billion in business. Let's really make it a low number. That's more than enough to cover the cost of the bridges over a 30-year span, is it not? So why are we being asked and obligated to pay tolls back and forth? It makes no sense to me whatsoever. I've never understood the mindset on this, and quite frankly, I never will. So we're going to pay attention to this moving forward. You know, you've got a lot of people who still want more studies. We've spent study after study after study. It's totally ridiculous. You know, we're going to spend $901 million for designing it. You know, it's allowing $40 million in contingencies. $175.5 million, that's going to be an oversight contract. Yeah, right. Basically, your graft, greed, and corruption is going to step in here. This just makes no sense to me. So we want to pay attention to this issue going forward. You know, we have other problems. Yes, we do. We have other problems in Kentucky, the very least of which, underground fire. We had explosions. The sewers blew, folks. Once again, in Louisville, the sewers blew. You got to ask yourself, what do you mean, once again, they blew? Well, many years ago, the sewers on Hill Street blew up, caused major, major damage because somebody was illegally dumping chemicals into the sewer system. The guy that was accused of that at one point was Donnie Disler. That name should be sound familiar to you. He actually helped Sandra McLaughlin get elected a judge. He campaigned for her out here in the Southwest End, which was always an amazing thing to me that, you know, you have a criminal helping a judge, but that's just my opinion. But here we go. But apparently, on Saturday, they had some issues where there was a faulty underground power cable. An LG&E underground power cable was running between Market and Jefferson Street. It sparked a fire. And, of course, that energy from the fire and everything else, it built up because it's a sealed system. So it all built up, and it blew up the manhole cover, put a hole in the ground and everything else. Right there, I believe it was on Market Street. Caused a fire, blew the daggone manhole covers off. Police headquarters was the closest thing to it. They apparently had to worry about a few things there. It caused all kinds of street closings. And, you know, so we're looking at this. So here's an infrastructure problem. An LG&E infrastructure problem. You can wait to see when your rates go up for this particular situation, because they will. So they're going to raise the rates at LG&E once again, I'm sure, to cover the cost of fixing their mistakes. But, you know, it brought back a lot of memories of the sewers blowing over on Hill Street area, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And we thought it was happening all over again. So we're going to spend billions of dollars to build a bridge. They're going to make $78 billion off of. Or that's going to be the economic impact across the region. And we're going to pay tolls for it. Now, if we're going to be forced to spend money, I would much rather make sure that I don't have underground wires that are going to blow up the city sewers and maybe blow up my house because of some malfeasance or neglect on the part of LG&E. That's infrastructure. So let's talk about the real problems here. You want more problems? I'll tell you another one. Water pipe, major flood. This is coming out of WFPL. Our good friend Philip Bailey over at WFPL is telling us about a major flood from a major water pipe burst in Mayor Greg Fisher's office. Apparently, Fisher's chief of staff discovered the flooding about 2 o'clock. This was on Saturday. And, of course, they went in to try to save valuable artwork and historic furniture in Metro Hall. But the pipe burst on the 6th floor of the building, cascading to the 4th and the 2nd floors. It also included, yep, Metro TV Studios. You know your little Channel 25 on Inside Cable, folks? That's Metro TV Studios. Guess what? It included that. So here you got all this electronic equipment that's being flooded out. We've got sewers blowing in downtown Louisville because of LG&E. According to Chris Pointer, the mayoral spokesman, Chris Pointer, they still don't know what caused the pipe to burst, but they think it might be connected to the explosion of the sewers in and around City Hall on Saturday morning. Since it dislodged manhole covers, blew the manhole covers off, and shut down a few downtown Louisville blocks, evacuated Metro Police Headquarters, there's a good chance, since the Metro Police Headquarters is right there next to City Hall, there's a good chance that it possibly is what caused this pipe. So you see how everything is interconnected? We have all this old infrastructure in Louisville. All this old LG&E crap that they haven't looked at or taken care of for years is starting to hit us in the butt. You've got all these old sewers and everything else that build up fumes and toxins and everything that are going to explode. You've got all this old plumbing in City Hall, the mayor's office, for goodness sake. You know, we've got a lot here. And let's not forget the history. We've got historic furniture in there. The Speed Museum had artwork that they had loaned to the mayor's suite as part of the renovation they just finished up in there. They had lent him artwork, you know, irreplaceable artwork. They placed it throughout his office, his suite, his lobby. You know, so now they're going to have to figure out a way to restore the artwork. You know, they don't think that there's that much damage to it, but it's possible. So now we have more added expenses. Who's going to pay for that? But they want us to pay tolls for a bridge that's going to have an economic impact of $78 billion minimum, according to their own estimates. These are the things that drive me nuts. These are the things that I can't understand people not paying attention to and standing up. And as our good friend Paul in the chat room says, you know, we have to have taxes raised to cover the aging infrastructure issues. See, Paul, I don't really have that much of an issue or comment on that. You know, I understand we have to pay for some things, and if we have to have raised taxes, if that is a necessary thing to fix the infrastructure for a set amount of time, not an unlimited amount of time, I can actually be open to that. But I agree with your next statement as well. Let's vote on which issues we're willing to fund and when. And that's the key here. When do we get to decide anything? We didn't want tolls. They're going to force it on us anyway. We didn't want a redone spaghetti junction and two new bridges. We wanted one new bridge. They're going to force this on us anyway. We didn't ask to spend $3 billion. They're going to make us spend $3 billion to put in a bridge that we don't need, to tear down a road and build new roads in the same spot that we don't need. But the tolls are nothing more than what? An illegal tax? It's nothing more than another tax. It's a fee that you have to pay if you want to do anything. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, you don't have to go to Indiana. And Indiana don't have to come to Kentucky. So here for many, many years now, 20, 30 years now, we have been sitting here talking about regionalization. And now we're doing all we can to get separation. Makes no sense to me. Speak of the devil, Mr. Paul, how are you, sir?
The devil made me do it, Ed.
I understand. I must have piqued your interest. What's up, my friend?
You alluded to the comment in the chat room pertaining to the voting thing. You know, Ed, the mayor of Louisville, Kentucky, Greg Fisher, not too many weeks ago, decided that he was going to try to promote a wonderful idea of his that would allow a local option sales tax to occur somewhere down the road. Now, he and a number of other mayors from around Kentucky lobbied the 2013 General Assembly to try to get that enacted into law. I don't think they succeeded this go-around. But one of the things that Fisher himself made a big deal out of was the opportunity for the tax-paying citizens to have a chance to vote on what projects would get funded. And, you know, if the citizens didn't like it, didn't like the project, they would vote no on the proposal.
Right.
You know, Ed, this is a classic doublespeak. Fisher, like every one of these other political hacks, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. If that's such a good concept, and frankly, I think that as a concept is a very good concept. I would love to have us, the taxpaying public, to vote on these tax increases no matter what form they take. Okay.
Right.
But if that's such a good concept, how come Mayor Greggy isn't out there talking about such issues as it relates to aging infrastructure? He's not. He's not. Now, he and his spokespeople will say, well, we might put that on the ballot. But Fisher hasn't even mentioned infrastructure renewal. He's talking about all of these bricks and mortar projects that make people feel good. Libraries, new buildings, and new community centers and all of that jazz. Now, I'm not taking away anything away from the merits of those projects. But, you know, a new library don't mean crap if the streets and roads and sewers and water lines that service it are crumbling as we speak. They don't
anything. They don't. And, you know, that's kind of one thing. You know, as you know, I've been very critical of this plan for the local sales option tax, and I tell you why. It wasn't because I don't think the idea has merit. I think the idea has a lot of merit. We, the people, should decide if we're going to spend more money where it's going to go. The problem for me was that in the drafted language that I saw, there was nothing in there. They would force these cities like Louisville, who would take advantage of this every way they could, they would force them to put this money into the project. For example, if they decided they wanted to do a local sales tax and let us decide whether we wanted to do a local sales tax to build the KFC Yum Center, for example, it's already built, I know, you know. But the way this thing was structured was that money was going to go into the general fund and we were going to trust these people to spend it where it was supposed to be spent. They don't spend federal grant money the way it's supposed to be spent now. They abuse that. If the feds ever decided they wanted to get serious, they would shut down any federal grant money coming into Louisville, Kentucky tomorrow.
It is just not federal grant money. They are irresponsible top to bottom.
Well, we know that.
About any tax revenue. And the most glaring example was that wonderful sales pitch that we all bought into many, many years ago regarding the Kentucky lottery. That lottery was sold to the citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky as a means to fund education. And instead, where does the money go from the proceeds of the lottery?
It goes to the general fund.
Into the general fund. So they were lying sons of bitches back then, and they're lying sons of bitches right now.
I totally agree, and that's why I did not like the way that it was structured for the local sales office. I am 100% agreement with you. And the second thing is, too, when you get into infrastructure, and here's one thing that always puzzles me and one thing that drives me completely batshit crazy. Let's look at the Yum Center once again. The Yum Center was built where, Paul?
Oh, it's built in beautiful downtown Louisville.
Right, and it was built on LG&E. LG&E, they had to move LG&E property that was loaded with environmental carbons and everything else. They had to move all of that at our expense to let LG&E, our good corporate citizen LG&E, off the hook for their pollution and all the environmental problems they caused in Louisville. That cost millions of dollars to us. And they didn't clean the damn site up. They built right on top of it. So all that's going to come back to haunt us later. But what the issue here is, though, we've got LG&E, who is responsible for blowing the sewers over the weekend. We've got LG&E, who probably is responsible for causing the water pipe burst in Mayor Fisher's office. But even if they're not responsible for that, somebody is. What I'm getting at is this. The people we should be holding responsible for the infrastructure needs are not taking care of the infrastructure needs, nor are they responsible to pay for it. We paid to move LG&E's stuff to put a daggone arena on top of contaminated land. So it saved LG&E millions of dollars. Did they give us a break in our daggone rates? No, our rates went up again. Look at what MSD does. MSD gives the city of Louisville money every year and builds sidewalks for them, for example, in residential neighborhoods. They pay for sidewalks. That's not the function of MSD. So what do? They do that illegal tax and raise their rates so that we have to pay for sidewalks that we're never going to use. You know, that's the thing. We don't hold these entities accountable. The Louisville Water Company? Go ahead.
Hang on here, Ed, because I think you're mixing a couple of entities in, putting them in the same pot, and I don't think they deserve to be in the same pot. LG&E is a regulated monopoly. They can't get a single dime in rate increases unless the Kentucky Public Service Commission says that it is permitted.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Now, LG&E is also a well-connected local company. They're top brass, hobnob with the bureaucrats and the movers and shakers of Louisville. And I think that this KFC Yum Center concept was one of those backroom deals that the movers and shakers put together.
Mm-hmm.
In an effort to help mitigate the financial responsibility that LG&E might have had they held on to the ownership of that land. Because as you well know, there was actually a site, the old water company site, if you will, that didn't have those types of environmental problems. And many, many consultants actually said it was a better site for the KFC Yum Center. So, if you want to be a conspiracy person and suggest that the old LG&E site down on the river was part of a conspiracy, I'm okay with that. But when it comes to raising rates now, both the water company and the Metropolitan Sewer District, they're unregulated. They have to answer to nobody except their own boards of directors when it comes time to rate increases. So I make a huge distinction between LG&E as a private company, a private corporation who has to survive on the basis of profits versus MSD and the water company, both of whom are governmental entities, and they don't have to survive on the basis of profits because when their expenses start to exceed their revenue, they simply say, let's stick it to the users, we're going to raise the rates.
Well, yes and no. The regulated, unregulated argument, you're absolutely right on. But the reason I use LG&E, even though the rate increases are regulated, they still get a rate increase every year. Every time they ask for a rate increase, they get it. Nobody's going to tell them no. All right, the question is, you know, when you get into the regulated, unregulated, and you want to compare MSD and LG&E, we've got a great example just a few years ago, and this is when I met you and Ray Pierce of Stop It. This was over the 32% rate increase that MSD pushed through because MSD can raise rates. That's why MSD always comes in under 7%, folks, is because up to 7%, they can raise rates every year up to 7% with no oversight and nobody's crying foul. Anything over 7% requires Metro Council approval. So when they entered into this consent decree and then they decided to go ahead and try to choke us to death, which they did, they got a 32% increase that got approved by the Metro Council. What's really intriguing here for me, though, Paul, is you talk about MSD and Louisville Water Company being government agencies and LG&E isn't. That's not exactly true either. Louisville Water Company is actually a private enterprise, but it's 100% owned. All of its stock is owned by the city of Louisville.
By a government agency.
Right,
so
but that doesn't make them a government agency.
It makes them a de facto government agency insofar as the controller is the government, even though they may be a, quote, private organization. The fact that they're 100% owned by the city of Louisville makes them a de facto government agency.
Well, sure, and it's the same thing with MSD.
And, well, the MSD is a state agency, actually,
mm-hmm.
and they call it a quasi-governmental agency,
right.
Which is fuzzy language for saying it's supposed to be a mixture of a private and a government, but the reality is it functions like a government agency more so
right.
than it does a private agency.
And this is how they control us, though, because the biggest difference, whether you call Louisville Water Company a private or a government agency or MSD versus LG&E, whatever, the biggest difference for me is this. LG&E elects their board of they elect their board of representatives. Their board is an elected body. MSD and Louisville Water Company, regardless of whether we want to consider them private or government, we won't split hairs on it, every board member is appointed by the mayor. The mayor has his hands at every agency throughout Louisville. That's what the disturbing part is. MSD wanted a 32% rate increase. The board said, yeah, let's ask for a 32% rate increase. The Democratic mayor uses his influence against his Democratic council and says, give us a rate increase or else. They give it up. Louisville Water Company, they raise their rates anytime they want to, and they fully admit that they're a for-profit agency. The Louisville Water Company is not a nonprofit agency, so it's a private business. All the stock is owned 100% by Louisville, and you know, so it is essentially government controlled. But since when did government get into the for-profit business? See, those
well,
are the disturbing things.
Well, the government's been in the for-profit business for a long time. If you recall, one of the most profitable business enterprises out
mm-hmm.
there. You and I as individuals and even Rupert Murdoch as a wealthy multi-billionaire can't own a company that runs a lottery, not
right.
in Kentucky.
Right.
That is a government operation that was crafted in a way to make sure that no private individuals, no private companies can ever, ever run that. And what's the excuse given as to why the government needs to run the lottery exclusively? What's the official reason, Ed?
You tell me.
It will be done fairly
right,
and responsibly,
right.
and it will be accountable to the citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Yep.
Now, this is the same government that pisses money away on all sorts of things, has one of the worst education systems in the United States, can't figure out how to find money to pay for a bloated retirement system that's underfunded, and is going to be the cause of a special session where they're going to waste more money. And this is the agency, this government is the agency that's going to ensure a fair and equitable and transparent operation of a multi-billion-dollar gambling operation?
See, and that's exactly it. And it's not just that. Who appoints the members of the board of the Kentucky Lottery? The governor does.
Oh, that would be the governor.
Exactly. So at the state level, the governor of Kentucky appoints everybody to everything. He has full control of every agency. At the local level, the mayor of Louisville, in this particular case, Democrat Greg Fisher, appoints every board member to anything of meaning. So, you know, we've got to look at all of this stuff in play. This is nothing more than a way to take we the people for every dime we can. And anybody that doesn't believe that is living in some kind of a shell somewhere. It is totally beyond reason to me that we are struggling financially the way we are. They want to build bridges that we shouldn't have to pay for because they're going to get that back into economic development by their own numbers, as I pointed out at the top of the show. You know, we've got infrastructure going rampant, and nobody cares about the infrastructure until it's so far gone it has to be replaced brand new, which increases the cost.
Oh,
all
you
right.
Mean like
the rates continue going up.
You like the Sherman-Minton Bridge emergency?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that was a pretty clever move on the part of state government, is that they got one by the federal government. They really did. They got federal funding for that.
I don't think they got it by the federal government. I really don't. The federal government knew what they were doing with that. You got John Yarmuth up there, and your Democrats sit up there, Ben and Obama's here.
You go to the feds and say, I got a bridge that needs repair. What are the feds going to tell you? We'll put you on the list, right?
It depends on if you're connected or not.
They put you on the list. But you go to the feds and you say, oh, my God, my bridge is about to snap in half. It's about to spring because of some steel that we found some cracks in. And the feds will say, oh, my God, we can't ignore this. So But in the process of doing that, didn't that project take money away from other projects here in the nation that probably were just as important to those communities?
Sure. Well, sure. Of course it did. Of course it did. And that's the reality of the world we live in. And what's fascinating, because when you use the Sherman-Minton, this is exactly why you need to keep the upkeep up to avoid that immediate emergency expense, because the Sherman-Minton, the T1 steel, that was the problem with this thing, had been cracked for years and years and years. This wasn't anything new. The bridge inspectors, the ones that were doing their job correctly, reported the stuff.
Wait a minute, Ed. You're talking about the bridge inspectors that were all state employees working for the state government?
Yes.
Oh,
and,
okay.
I said the ones that were doing their job correctly, because we know a few of them that were paid off. Look at the painting of the Kennedy Bridge. But, we look at this in play, though. We can research these records and see these cracks. Anybody that drove that bridge every day for any length of time, including me, saw the cracks in the steel. They were very visible. They weren't hidden. And nobody did one damn thing until they decided they could cry foul, call it an emergency, and force the feds to pay for something that the states were responsible for. What does that do? If the state can't get tax increases because the people don't want it, the locals can't get tax increases because the people don't want it, the feds always get their tax increases. They just say, screw the people. We just saw that January 1st when they let the Bush tax cuts expire. Restaurant business right now is down almost 6%. Just because of increased taxes coming out of people's paychecks. So we're losing jobs. That's how they work this game. It's a scam.
Anybody who is listening to your show, Ed, that still believes that government is the answer to most of these problems, they're really hanging on to the last vestiges of the dream that used to be called the American dream. And, several decades ago, when government was a whole lot more benign than what it is today, there were some good issues that government intervened in and did have, I think they intervened correctly. But today, government is wanting to get their sticky little fingers in every pie that they see. And the bureaucrats that are within this government machine, their mentality is just damn scary. It is scary.
Well, it really is, and people have to understand, too, this isn't just a one party. This is a unit party. Republicans are just as bad as Democrats in this situation. They are all in it to get their hands in anything they can and maintain whatever power they think they've got. I'm going to take another call, Walt. Stick on the line, all right? I want you here. I'm going to take this other call real quick. Caller, you're on the air, 720.
Yes, how you doing? I'm listening to
this is my buddy from Colorado. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay. I've just listened to the conversation, about what government supposed to be doing. What the same program what this guy was talking about that's supposed to be so outrageous, they've been here since, some of them been here since the 50s, and they've been going on very fine when we had three Republican presidents. And
now, wait a minute. Hold on. Before you go down that road, all right, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to go down the road that Republicans are the problem. Everybody's trying
to blame. I'm not
going to
say that.
All right, because you always do it. I want to make sure we're not
going to say it. But see, what, I'm not saying the Republican was a problem, because to me, I thought it was a good thing when they was doing it, helping people.
Okay.
And I heard what you just said. You know, Republicans just as bad as Democrats when it comes to doing the things that they do. Both parties got their hand, and you can't really say nothing good about both parties, because for one, for all of them to be a party that's for the represent the United States, and they can't sit across the table and talk to each other like adults and make the people who voted for them to put them in a position for them to be there to represent our country and represent the people who went, probably stood in the rain and snow and everything, to put them where they at. And they too selfish to sit across the table and act like human beings because a certain group of people don't want to see the party to get the country back on track.
Okay. Now, see, now I like this conversation because we're talking, all right? How do we get the people to get excited enough to get out there and make the changes? Because we have as many bad Republicans as there are Democrats and vice versa. On this show, I've always referred to the two-party system as the uniparty. I don't think anybody can definitively sit here and say that Democrats are better than the Republicans.
I'm not
or Republicans are better. No, I'm not saying you. What I'm saying is this. How do we get people excited enough to realize, when we look at this Congress, for example, okay, most of these congressional members have been in office for years and years and years. This Congress, overall, both parties involved, a 9% approval rating is all they've got, and they continue to get reelected. It doesn't matter what your party is. How do we get people to get these guys out of office? If the majority of people are giving them a 9% approval rating, how are they getting reelected?
You know what? I asked the same question, why and how. But, you know, this is America. Some people get elected because the people in their community know them, they think. A lot of them feel the same way what the people who they send to Washington, D.C. do. But when they get to Washington, D.C., they get on a whole different page of what the people who send them there to do. Because my thing is like this. That goes for Republicans and Democrats. What's going to be wrong for you guys to sit across the table and try to make America look like the powerful country that it is and that it's been for all these years? Why
That's
we got to be
question.
The left? Huh?
That's a good question.
Why we got to be the laughing stock of the world? Because right now we can't even come together as a whole. When them soldiers over there fighting in Iraq and going to fight, they ain't fighting for Democrats or Republicans. They fighting for America. So that's where all government folks to work when they get in. It get me so charged up when I hear certain groups try to blame one. That's why I call stations and go off like I'm, because this what they want us to do, call in and talk about each other and go off, because they ain't working for
exactly.
me and you no more.
You
exactly.
are right. He's right.
Exactly.
100%
Paul,
right on that.
Weigh in, Paul.
He's 100% right on that. They want us fighting amongst ourselves. You are absolutely correct on that. They want us fighting amongst ourselves. You're right. You're right.
Every legitimate plan of attack when you're at war, and believe me, I think that there was a war on for the takeover of this country. The Republicans want it. The Democrats want it. They don't really care about us.
No.
This is all about two-party power and control. So there's a war on for the minds of Americans. I could tell you why most of the world laughs at America today, in my opinion, anyway. But when you take a country like ours that will go over there, across the sea, go to the Middle East, go anywhere you want to, insert country here, and we continue giving them money when they're
mm-hmm.
fighting our way of life every year, you should
mm-hmm.
laugh. When we're giving countries $30 billion a year, and they're sitting over there in a communist regime or an undemocratic regime, killing people, slaughtering people, not having any civil rights at all, and we're giving them $30 billion a year anyway, of course they're going to laugh.
Both parties do it. Both parties.
Exactly. And I'll
both
be honest
parties.
With you. Well, I'll be
it
honest
ain't
with
just
you.
The Democrat. Both parties do it.
Well, I
so,
agree with you there. But part of the big problem for me with the Republicans is defense spending, because I think the Republicans spend way too much money on defense because they're too busy trying to keep everybody happy around the world. The Democrats want to give everything to you. The Republicans want to take everything from you.
Right.
So it's
just the thing that, you know, we trust these people when we send them to Washington, D.C., and then see what it should be. When we see them not doing their job, we sign them there. We should be able to sign them right there on the spot. You know what? You're no longer representing us. We got 200,000 people voted that we want you out of there because you ain't doing your job. Now we want you to go. It should be all about the people right now because the government ain't working for us. They like the idea I can call shows and get on people's nerves and said some crazy shit. They won't answer my calls no more because they think I'm a nut. My government driving me crazy.
Well, the government drives everybody crazy. And I'll take your call, but I got to cut you off sometimes when we go down the narrow path. But here's the thing, though. I mean, this comes right back to what I said just a second ago, though. All these people continue electing the same people over and over and over. Let's look at somebody like a Strom Thurmond, who spent 50, 60 years in office, elected.
Uh-huh.
He didn't know anything about the people he was representing at that point. Let's look at somebody like Mitch McConnell, all right, on the Republican side. Let's look at Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader. What has he accomplished for anybody? You know,
nothing.
So you can see this on both sides of the aisle. And that's
only thing they accomplished to keep me and your blood pressure up.
Sure.
And them not doing anything. That's what they accomplished. How to make our blood pressure go up.
Well, they don't get my blood pressure up. I'll tell you that right now. You know,
It gets mine because, you know, I do volunteer work at soup kitchens and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I see so many Americans who got all – when you sit down and have a conversation with them, you get the best conversation out of people who stand in them line to get something to eat. So I go down there and do my little volunteer work, and I listen to them, and I see that ain't nothing getting better for the people who built this country and made it, but they fell off hard time. And then we got this group called themselves government in Washington, D.C. They don't see people like them. They don't even think about people like them. That's go for both parties. So it just burns me up. And that's what it bothered me for. Because, you know, we're supposed to be the powerful country in the world. We're supposed to be the greatest country in the world. So why we got so many homeless people, so many people living there? When you see a bunch of young kids in the streets because our government want to start taking from the poor first, the people who already ain't got nothing.
Mindset, but here's my thing.
They took training out of schools. They took all the stuff that used to make America the greatest country in the world. It's gone now. These people are suffering so hard today. I mean, when I was back in the day, I could have took time. I could have went to a trade, a deal. It ain't like that now.
Well, no, and you know that you know, you bring up a good point because we continue to talk about education, and the one thing that they continue talking about education is they want everybody to have a college degree. They must have a college degree, you know. Now the thing is, if everybody has a college degree, let's say everybody wants to be a computer programmer in this country,
mm-hmm.
and everybody in this country had a college degree for computer programming, you're going to get 5 to 10% of those people who are going to get a decent job programming computers. But the rest of those people are going to work minimum wage, sweeping the floors at IBM. You can't overeducate. But see, that you bring up vocation schools, and that's kind of where I'm going with this, because we had a guy that ran for office here for governor a couple times in Kentucky by the name of Gatewood Galbraith.
Mm-hmm.
And Gatewood was very, very intelligent because he would talk about education. In Kentucky, we have something called the Keys Program. And that's a program that once you graduate high school, you accumulate X amount of money or whatever, and they'll give you a little bit each year towards college. Well,
mm-hmm.
it's just towards college seeking that degree. What Gatewood had talked about is why not let these guys opt where they want to go. Let them go to vocational school. Let them learn auto mechanics. Let them learn carpentry. You know, it's good enough for Jesus, right? Carpentry. Let them, you know, let these guys spend their money educating themselves so that they can be a valuable working member of society. Don't force them to get a higher education. I mean, let's face it.
But you got to get it like this. It ain't forcing them. But when you had all these different type of trades that people used to go pick up to make a living for their family, they ain't there no more. You can go to school and, you know, everything that was good for me back in the days, it ain't good. That's why you see so many. I'm not just talking about black kids in the streets. I see a lot of white kids riding their skateboard because school don't enter them no more. It ain't getting them no wealth that they got to try to do something to make something out of their life. Because when the job's going down from $9 an hour to, and when people used to work and they could come home at 5 o'clock and be with their family, and see all that is gone. People working too hard to get so much of nothing. And
you're
then,
right.
You know, so my thing is this. Okay, everything that was good for us, it ain't good for our kids. It ain't going to be 30 or 40 years that our kids got to worry about to pay for. Hell, they ain't doing it now. And that's today. And
you're
yesterday,
right.
And last week. So I ain't thinking about 30 years from now. I'm talking about the young folks
right.
today paying to
right.
be a
cop. I've got to get this other call in. Hang tight, all right?
Yeah.
Sorry, 805 number. Is this Mayo?
That it is, Ed. How you doing tonight?
What's going on, big guy? What's on your mind?
I've just been listening. So many. It's like where to start. You know, with the sewers and that, WLKY, somebody actually did a decent job. And I think it's a 3 or 4 part series, but it's called Cracks in the System. And they're mm-hmm. talking about how much of, in the state of Kentucky, our infrastructure is getting ready to fail. The dams, the bridges, sewers, they went down to the, you know, since he was talking about, you know, the sewers blowing up, but it went down to the overflow wall, which is just a little 4 foot brick wall, you
mm-hmm.
know, built in a big giant pipe. No control, no valve, no nothing, but that's supposed to keep, you know, the, what is it, gray unprocessed water from flowing into, you know, wherever it's not supposed to flow.
Well, you know, there was one thing that I actually agreed with Bud Chardin on, and a lot of people are going to find that really odd since I took him to task so many times. Bud Chardin was a former chairman of the MSD. And the one thing that I took, executive director, I should say, the one thing that I agreed with Bud Chardin on many years ago was, here in 2005, I believe it was, he said that we needed about $50 million. Now, that's a drop in the bucket. But $50 million to upgrade the pumping systems here in Louisville in case of flood. You know, we've got 7 to 9 pumping systems that are out of date and out of repair. So when those walls or those levees break, something's got to be able to get rid of that water, right? And,
yep.
you know, they didn't do anything about it. We did not do one damn thing about it. Those pumps have never been updated. And that would have been a relatively minor expense. Now, what's going to happen is those pumps are going to fail sometime in the next 5 years. There's no doubt about it. And that cost is going to be $500 million to replace them. Now, you know, you're talking about these levees and stuff. Now, would it have made more sense using that example to spend the $50 million to upgrade the pumps and update the pumps rather than have to worry about a full replacement where you got to spend $500 million later? It's the same concept with the levees and the dams and the things you're talking about. Our infrastructure in Kentucky, Mayo, I'm in 100% agreement. It is totally garbage, and it's not going to get any better.
Well, they need to do away with the general fund, I mean, for whether you want to say for accounting or accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if this is the bridge fund, it's called the bridge fund, and all that money goes in there, and only money spent towards the bridge can come out of that fund, or the road fund, or the you know, the highway dam fund, you know, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about, you know, LG&E raising rates. There was he was a retired Courier Journal writer, and I hate to say Leo, but it was actually a great article, and he followed the money, and it was the same number over and over. I think it was either, I want to say $37 million or $64 million on the property for the Yum Center. So if you ever get a chance to research that, that's good.
We will.
But on the rates, I don't know if you noticed, I think I shot you an email on this, but, you know, since time, you know, Mayor Fisher's blackmail didn't work, you know, trying to get free cable for all government agencies and that, and, you know, Insight lost its license, or they didn't renew Insight's license, Time Warner bought them out, you know, Louisville's in for a change because, unlike Insight, Time Warner actually throttles their cable.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice on your newest bill, and I had a discussion with a girl because it's like, oh, I'm an Insight Rewards customer, you know, for so long my rates dropped.
Right.
So then I see this new rate on my bill, $5 for WHN. So I call up and I say, well, what's this? They go, well, that's for wireless home networking. I say, well, I bought my modem, I bought my router. You all didn't install it. It's not your property, so take this off. Oh, well, that's been on the bill for 2 years, and I've got, I don't know whether you want to call it anal retentive or attention
well,
to detail. But I'm going, ma'am, I'm sitting here looking at my past 6 months' bill in paper and the last 3 months' bills on my website, and there is no WHN.
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm going to make a phone call to FCC, try to find out a little info on that. But like you were saying, you know, they throw something on there, and most people don't pay attention. A lot of people, they may have it automatic debit out of their banking or checking or something, and you know, they don't even look at the emails. They just get used to it. Like a lot of insurance companies, you know, they'll actually continue to send people bills, you know, elderly people, even after they've been paid off, just to see if things.
Well, sure, and especially when you have them automatically deducted from your account, that's always fine. And I want to clarify something too, Paul. You're still on the line, by the way, but I want to clarify something because Paul did point out that some of those pumps I was talking about have already been replaced, and I agree. A couple of them have been. I think 3 out of 9 have been. You know, but the other ones have not been replaced. The point I was making was, if they would have done their job and updated those. It would have cost them $50 million to repair and update. They replaced three of them, and it cost them just as much to replace those three as it did, it would have cost to upgrade all of them. The point I was trying to make was the cost comparison analysis. That's what we're used to in government, and that's what's driving everybody crazy. You know, we've got to find a way. It's like our friend in Colorado was telling us, and he's back on the line now. It's we've got to find a way to sit down and talk. But nobody wants to talk. The Republicans want the power, and the Democrats want the power. Well, we shouldn't. That's the whole point. I think is what everybody is overlooking. What everybody is trying to do now, we've gotten to the point where we've become divisive right away. Obama gets elected, and I'm no fan of the president, and I admit that freely, but he gets elected, and we've got automatic division. Bam. I've seen division on steroids over the last 5 years. Nobody's willing to work for anything. But what you've got to understand is this has been a systematic thing with our government. It doesn't matter whether it was Republican leader or Democrat leader. This has been a systematic thing from our government since at least the 1930s. Every 10 years or so, we lose more and more, and they gain more and more power, whoever is in power. I don't care which party's in power, until we're finally where we're at right now. So this has been a systematic thing. When you say, why do we have to get used to it, it's because we have got used to it. Huh?
You call that power? I don't call it power. I call it weak government. Because they ain't getting nothing done. So how can you call it power
when
getting done?
When I say this is government power. No, they don't have to get anything done on behalf of us. When I talk about government power, I'm talking about the elected elite, because that is the power. The Democrats don't care about us. The Republicans don't care about us. All they care about is their party leadership and keeping power within that party within government. So it's not
about their behinds and their job.
That's what I'm talking about, government power, okay? So don't get that confused with people power, because the real problem.
I was just checking.
Oh, I know. Yeah. The real problem is our Constitution says of the people, by the people, and for the people. We the people have all the power, but we keep electing these guys to Congress with 50 and 60% of the vote, and they get a 9% overall approval rating. It's not one congressman that's bringing the whole lot down to 9%. That's a combined score for the entire Congress. You know, and as much as I want to sit here and blame President Obama for a lot of things, what people have to realize is the Congress is supposed to be our check and balance. If we're going to blame Barack Obama for anything, then we have to blame the House leadership. We have to blame the Senate leadership.
That's right.
Because that is your check and balance.
That's where the money going to come from.
Well, supposedly. Now, you think about
this. They can't
even
sit down, like y'all was just talking about the bridges and stuff, Father.
Sure.
What's been made in America? Everything in my house got the Chinese on it. Made
yeah, it's
in
got China.
China,
India, Japan, I know.
Yeah, ain't nothing been made. Ain't nobody got no job making nothing in America.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
So,
and
we got to stop looking at each other from the corner of our eyes, and we need to stop making our government pay for this action they're putting out here.
Well, here's something.
How do we do that? How do we make them do that?
Go ahead.
We did it in the 50s and the 60s when the government was all messed up. People came together and we changed a lot. So it got to be the people to do it. We can't pin on them. We already know what they're going to do. We got to stop hating on each other and try to do something.
Let
we
me
got
ask
to come
you this,
up.
But how, but
how
here's
do
the
we
thing.
Do it?
Yeah, how do you get people to come together? In the 50s and 60s, in the 50s and 60s, you could get that. But are we more divided today than we were then? Are we taking a step backward or are we taking a step forward when it comes to that?
I think we are.
So we
know why I said that?
Go ahead.
Because just the point about how both parties gets out there and give up on the people who voted for them, and just because soon they get to Washington, D.C., they get in a little clique. So once they get in them clicks, we don't mean shit. So that's why we got to figure out how we can get rid of all this madness that's keeping us fussing and calling each other. This party better. No, both parties toe up to me.
Sure they did.
Both parties.
So Paul, you're absolutely right. So Paul just asked a basic question, though. How do we get people united? Because that's the problem. You hear all these talk shows. You brought it up a minute ago, how you call all these different talk shows. You've got liberal talk shows. You've got conservative talk shows. You've got talk shows like this one.
We all got to get on the same page.
How
we
do
got
you
to
do that? But how do you do that?
If I had the answer, I'd tell you. I don't know.
There you go. There you go. And that's the thing, because both sides think that they have the answer. MSNBC thinks they've got the answer. Fox News thinks they've got the answer. So they both go down this preconceived agenda. They're not reporting news anymore. They're swaying the people's opinions because it's all commentary. We had a big old show about this last week. All right? So you've got mainstream news that sits there and reaches millions of people at one time that are dividing us more than ever. They are dividing us more than ever. We are more divided today than we were when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen a division to the level that we're going through today. So how do we get people united? Because we're trying. We do our best on this show. We blame both parties. You know, we know
but
that
you
the
know
blame
what
is in the process. What?
We just got to blame the people who not, because we
exactly.
all grown.
But,
we all got our own mind. We supposed to know the difference between right and wrong.
Sure, we're supposed to, but think about this. Think about this for a moment. Since the 80s, we have taken discipline out of schools.
Yeah.
We've taken discipline out of the home. You can't even spank your own kid.
Can't even whoop your kid's ass no more. Excuse my language.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You've taken discipline out of home. You've taken discipline out of schools. You've told the kids that they run the roost. So now the crazy people are running the asylum. You're giving the kids all the power over the adults from that level, from your age on. And then you tuple that with not even understanding what your government is all about. We've taken civics out of school. As you said a minute ago, we took vocational out of school. So we're not teaching our kids anything in school anymore. That's going to be a life lesson. You know, when I went to school, if a kid had a problem with math, he got a little extra attention, and he was taught differently. Today, if a kid has a problem with math, then you have to downgrade everybody's curriculum so that every kid is exactly equal. We can't even have kids play sports in school anymore at the lower level that have a winner and a loser because you don't keep score. You can't keep score. Somebody's going to lose.
Yeah, well, Ed, you grew up like when I grew up, and back then, if you brought a D home on your report card, your mom and dad yelled at you. Nowadays, the mom and dad go to school and yell at the teacher.
Exactly.
I
didn't bring D's home because I wasn't going to get in that kind of mess.
Me either.
But that's the reality. But that's
we had them kind of parents, they'll give us a look and we know to sit our ass down.
Oh, there ain't no doubt about it. And Paul, you're a little
bit older than me.
Oh, yeah. Paul, you're a little bit older than me. You know, you had it even rougher than I did. You knew where accountability was, didn't you?
Yeah.
It was called a leather belt.
Yep.
Hey, I know that's right.
Yep.
It wasn't no time out.
The worst thing
we didn't
I had
get that.
Man. Oh no, time out. You know
that
it was,
time out. I don't know where that came from.
It came from a guy by the name of Dr. Spock.
Spock.
Yeah, Dr. Spock needs to take it back.
His own son, his only son, committed suicide in his early 20s because he couldn't deal with the real world because his daddy never taught him how. And we're teaching this generation. We started teaching the generations before, including me. We started teaching this generation that they don't have to worry about it. The life owes them something. They don't have to give something back. All right. I got to cut you guys off. We're running out of time. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it, guys. My good friend from Colorado and Mayo, of course. Paul, you know what? You've been with us a whole hour, man. I'm going to give you a final thought.
Ed, the guy from Colorado, I'll tell you what. He's as frustrated as everyone here in the Midwest is with regard to the way government is not doing the job that we expect them to do. And I like a lot of his ideas about we ought to be able to fire them on the spot. The problem is that the people who could make that possible are the very same people that need to be fired on the spot, and that's the various state legislatures. His reference to the 50s and 60s might have been to a bunch of demonstrations occurred during the 50s and 60s, and it scared the hell out of the establishment, and they ended up being motivated to go fix some of these problems after they were scared to death. And I'm wondering, Ed, I'm wondering if this isn't where we are today, is that we need to scare these people on a personal level to do the things that we expect them to do for the greater good.
I think you're absolutely onto something there. And I tell you what, I think to some degree they're already somewhat scared. And I tell you why. We've got a couple of different things going on. One, you know, one of the biggest things that's got me disturbed with Department of Homeland Security is them buying up all of these daggone street tanks to put in neighborhoods. 1.6 billion rounds of all the handgun ammo. You can't find handgun ammo anywhere right now and haven't been able to for a couple of months. You know, and that's always a sure telltale sign. If you look throughout history at other governments and what they've done, they've taken the weapons, they've taken the ammo, they've done everything they can to disarm the populace. So that when things get so bad and the populace wants to fight back, they don't have anything to fight with. And I think ultimately we're seeing the government somewhat scared. However, as much as I say that, I don't see the people rising up to do what you're talking about. I don't see the people rising up and standing together like our good friend in Colorado just said. We've got to quit, you know, running away from the table. We've got to learn to talk to each other across the table. We're all adults. But we don't see that in leadership. And quite frankly, you know, the followers are doing exactly what they're taught by the leaders. You know, if I raised my kids and I sat on my ass every day in my couch and I never went to work every day, I lived off the government dime, I didn't show them a way to do anything for themselves, they would be messed up kids. They would be messed up kids. And unfortunately, that's the way a lot of our kids are today. And those are going to be the next generation. What's going to happen to the generation after that? But we adults aren't sitting here having these conversations and these rational conversations. We're sitting here placing blame on everybody but ourselves. The reality is, if you don't like Barack Obama, then don't vote for him. If you don't like Mitch McConnell, then don't vote for him. If you don't like anybody of them, don't vote for him. But every person in Washington started right here on a local level, whether that's Louisville or whether that's Denver. Most of those people started on a local level. Then they make a career. You want to end political careers? Here's what you do. You forget about Citizens United. Get rid of the corporate money that's funding all these super PACs. You put all these government leaders on a two-term limit, and you max their pay at $50,000 a year. That's it. $50,000 a year. You want a retirement? Pay into a 401k like I do. Pay into Social Security. You want medical? No problem. You pay the same thing I do. You pay for your benefits. You pay for your deductibles. You pay all your co-pays. Quit giving these guys a golden parachute and let them suck on our teat for 40 years. There's no excuses for that. You put a max 10-year limit on any elected representative at the federal level. You put them on a $50,000 a year income. And you make them pay for the same things we have to pay for and live in the same rules that we have to live by every day. What you're going to find is these lifelong guys are going to be gone in no time. You're going to find true people, citizens like me and you, who are willing to serve, to actually serve and do what's best for the people. Because they don't have to worry about a 40-year career. They've got to worry about today and doing what they were elected to do. It's up to you, America. It's time for you to get off your ass and do something constructive. I can't make you. All I can do is coax you. But if you wanted to get better, then you must get involved. That's it for tonight, folks. Thanks so much to our callers. Tomorrow night, we will continue this conversation. A lot going on. I want to get into some Rand Paul stuff. Let's want to talk a little bit about Chicago and what's going on up there with closing schools. Some Governor Steve Beshear vetoed a religious freedom bill. I think that's going to be an interesting story. It may be a telltale sign for what's going on in Kentucky as well. In the meantime, you folks have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.